Well, hello and welcome to Fearless Fabulous You. I am your host, Melanie Young. My guest and I are going to talk for the first half hour of the show, and then we're going to open up our questions, which I'll field throughout the show, but we'll answer your questions in the second part of the show, 30 minutes after. So again, you're listening to Fearless Fabulous You on W4WN. That's www.w4wn.com. So you can send your questions there. And this show will be podcast to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and other major channels. So what's the topic? We are going to talk about something that is inevitable for most of us. It's aging. And we're going to talk about how to age with grace, with vibrance, and how to address anything you may be feeling as you are aging in your life. Aging is a kind of a very broad term. It can be taken positively. It can be taken negatively. It should be always based on how you feel and how you want to live your life. Joining me today is a very interesting woman who is a certified gerontologist. You probably are wondering, what is that? You've heard of a gemologist? No relation. You've heard of a geriatric specialist? Yes, tied to aging. But what's a gerontologist? Well, I'm going to let her explain. But first, I'm going to set it up by telling you who she is. Lisa Rowan had a very successful career as an interior designer and decided to make the change to become a gerontologist. So she is a career changer, and she changed her career in her 50s, I believe. She did it for a variety of reasons. Well, I'll let her explain. But she was brought to me because I am of that age group where I face my own issues with growing older, and not just physical, but emotional. And I think many of you do as well. And a couple of my friends on Facebook cried out to me and said, no one's talking about certain things, like the side effects of menopause. People are brushing topics under the rug. Well, I always like to put them back up on the table and reset that table. So we're going to do that today, and I hope you'll settle in, and I hope you'll send me some questions because we're going to try to answer them. So I'd like to introduce LJ Rowan to Fearless Fabulous You.
Hello, Melanie. I am thrilled to be here and so excited to talk to women about being vibrant as they get older.
That's right. And vibrance is a better word than some of the other words out there. You and I corresponded on how I don't like the word anti-aging because it makes it sound like it's a terrible thing, where it should be proactive aging. And I think, we need to, as I said in the beginning, reset the table, which means reframe what we mean by anti-aging and make it pro-aging. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think a lot of advertising and promotion goes toward you need to have eternal youth versus positive vibrance.
I agree with you, Melanie, 100%. And one of my least favorite phrases is anti-aging, because in reality, it's a statement that is not factual or possible. We can't anti-age. Mm-hmm. It's not like an antioxidant, a vitamin that can kill oxidation or take out oxidation in our body or cells. We can't not age. So I think a more positive term and a more realistic term is to say healthy aging instead of anti-aging. I've never been a fan of that term, and I think it has a lot of charge to it that makes women feel badly if they're not doing all those things that the media and the advertisers are telling us we need to do to stop aging, to anti-age. So I think it does a disservice to women, and it's not one of my favorite terms.
Well, we are in agreement there, wholeheartedly, and yet there are issues that need to be, addressed because they are, part of the aging process, which is a beautiful thing. Because let's face it, and you'll agree, the opposite of aging with grace is not having the good fortune to be able to age. Many people lose their lives at an early age and don't have the gift of longevity. And longevity can be a very good thing, depending on how you choose to live your life. I want to before we go further, have you explain what is gerontology? Because some people may not understand that and the difference between that and, for example, geriatrics, just to set up your expertise.
Melanie, I get that question 100 times a day. And gerontology is a multifaceted discipline. It's a social science versus geriatrics. So let me explain geriatrics first. Geriatrics is a medical MD, is a geriatrician, and it focuses on medical conditions and diseases of older people. Whereas gerontology is the study of the process of aging. And so gerontology is a much bigger, much broader field. And it incorporates four different areas: biology, which is the workings of our internal organs and systems; physiology, which is the actual movement and mechanics of our bodies, of the way it moves; psychology, which is the study of the mind and the thoughts; and sociology, which is how we interact out in the world with other people. And that's very different from what a geriatrician does. So geriatrics is a very different sort of field. You go to a geriatrician when you are older and have diseases that affect older people, and you are then treated by them. But they do not encompass any of the other facets of the aging process, nor, like many gerontologists, like I do, is focused on prevention and preventable changes in our health and the options for healthy aging. That's another thing that geriatricians really don't look at much.
Well, it's interesting. So gerontology, like many other similar comparative areas, gerontology is the more holistic aspect of studying the process of aging, where geriatrics is treating the disease, which, if you equate it to other types of illnesses and areas of medicine, many doctors treat the disease, but they can't treat the overall symptoms, which can be biological, physiological, psychological, and sociological, which you said. And this is something you go and study in a specific type of school for anyone who's interested in, because I want to again mention that you chose to go into this field after working, I read, as an interior designer for many years. So why did you decide to go into this line of study, and where did you go to study?
Well, first, I'd like to say you're absolutely right on the money about what you just said previously, because it is a holistic approach. Gerontology is the body, mind, and spirit, is the way I like to describe it. So it's the whole person. Mm-hmm. And it's not just treating the symptoms of a disease. It gets to the root of what needs to be done to prevent those diseases. And that's what I think the major difference is.
Exactly.
Yes, I was an interior designer for over 3 decades. And just like you, I had a very serious health crisis. And I had a hysterectomy when I was 46 years old, and I almost died from complications from the hormone replacement that they gave me. And what turned out to be the case is that I was allergic to the hormones. And I stopped weighing myself at 90 pounds because I was afraid to get on the scale anymore. And when I regained my health, I realized that there were no books, which I looked for desperately, much as was the case with you. And so I decided that there needed to be a book for women to help them understand postmenopause and the whole process and things that were developing and happening to my body that there was no documentation on. And so that's how I started this journey. And as I got closer and worked with an MD and got a book proposal pulled together, it became apparent that I needed to get more knowledge if I really wanted to go into this. And I've always been a science nerd at heart, so I had this sort of dual arts and science love. And so I decided to go back to school and focus on gerontology because I saw that that was the most preventative avenue available for us to go into and learn about for aging, to prevent aging to prevent some of the diseases, excuse me, of aging that are preventable, and to try to be as healthy as we can, and to focus on being as vibrant as we possibly can. So I attended the University of Southern California, which is the oldest gerontology school in the United States, and not my words, but the rankings rank them as the number one school in the country. Mm-hmm. And it was unbelievable going back to school at 56 years old.
Well, I want to bring up that it is actually can be a great thing. Honestly, I would love to. I like you. I went back and enrolled to get health coach certification to kind of back up everything I was writing and speaking on. And going back to school is something you can do at any age. And I encourage it because it's also a great way to keep your mind vibrant. I do want to point out, because I am getting a few questions that you don't see on the screen. One of my listeners want to know what happened. Why did you have surgery? You actually suffered, and I've addressed this many times on my show, endometriosis, which affects many women and is a very painful condition. And that's why you had to have your hysterectomy, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So you had a full hysterectomy, and then you said the hormones they gave you almost killed you.
Correct. I was allergic to them, which is really incredibly unusual. Mm-hmm. It's like 1 in 10 million. But they were giving me oral hormones, and I couldn't take them, and I was having a whole physiological reaction to it, and a biological reaction to it, and they didn't know. And I got with a really wonderful doctor who said, we need to try something different.
Right.
This isn't working. And they put me on bioidentical hormone cream. And all of a sudden, I could keep food down. And that was my problem, is I couldn't keep any food down. And I couldn't think. And I was losing nutrients and, mm-hmm. and literally losing, not able to put any calories in my body. Wow. to nourish it. And so
I think it's important to just interject here that this is a very important thing, because to understand for my listeners that you can't just go out and start popping hormone pills and supplements that may or may not be right for you, and you need to do it under medical supervision, because something can happen. In your case, something really bad did happen. You had a violent allergic reaction and had to be reset with other types of hormones. And I'm just saying that now because there's a huge industry out there, as we know, called the supplement industry. And a lot of people are just going out and getting supplements without thinking of the side effects.
Absolutely. And I feel like that there's a lot of OBGYNs and endocrinologists who are really up to speed with what's what in the latest development with hormones. And those are the folks that I definitely recommend to women if they ask me to talk to, because they're the ones that will really know what's going on and be able to prescribe the proper medication for women.
Exactly. And that, so I just to set up for my listeners, and I see some questions coming in. I want to let everybody know I'm going to probably spend the last part of the show just answering questions. So if I don't get them now, I will get them after the 30-minute one, because I want to get into some key points that I'd like to cover with, as she goes by LJ, by the way, LJ Rowan. Let's talk about hormones, because hormones, first of all, aging, I believe aging is a process. It's not a disease. It is a process in your life. It's part of your life's journey, and I have the gift of longevity, good for you. And the key is to maintain your health throughout this process, so you're not, you don't get sick. Hormones are a huge factor in the aging process because they change over time. Let's address that from how it impacts you from the mind-body standpoint, and then we can talk about ways to address it from a natural standpoint.
Well, that's a great question, and I think that my focus is women 55 and over who mm-hmm. have completed menopause. And the reason for that is exactly what you were speaking about, that hormones are such a vital part. And once a woman is finished with menopause, she doesn't have a whole lot of hormones to draw on. I call it a protective armor of hormones. And we lose our protective armor at menopause. And everything shuts down, and literally the tap turns off. We don't have estrogen and we don't have progesterone being produced by our ovaries anymore. And so it must come from another source. So you end up with having nothing there to help you with any of the issues that, that come from losing your estrogen and progesterone.
Do you know how many different types of hormones the human body has, and particularly women, because I know women and men's bio, their biophysiology is different. Do we have any idea how many hormones the body has?
Well, being a social scientist, I will say that I believe that there is 11 major hormones, but there's mm-hmm. dozens. There's actually
right.
dozens. So, but there's 11 major ones, and the ones that we hear about are the top, say, three, which
right.
are testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone, because
right.
those are probably the key players in the functionality of our bodies and keeping everything humming on all, you know, on all fronts.
And for reproduction, which is obviously key. And as you said, with your hormones change over time. We are going to be dealing today with 55 and older, so postmenopausal, but premenopausal, perimenopausal, they start to change. And there are a lot of it's hard because a lot of women want to know about hormone replacement options. These can be very tricky. As you know, I'm a breast cancer survivor, and I had hormone positive, receptor positive, which means estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. So I was put on a drug post treatment. So I had already gone through menopause. My treatment put me in menopause, and I was on a estrogen reduction, hormone reduction drug. It was an estrogen reducer, not an anti-estrogen. And that basically turned my body into just a dry, scratchy, dry, scratchy mess with osteopenia. I'm off it now. But sometimes you were put on certain types of hormonal drugs to treat what is an illness or a condition. And you need to ask your doctor what those side effects are, because they don't always work for you. My question to you is, what are some natural ways to boost your hormone levels?
Melanie, I think that there are several things that you can do to help your body to overcome the lack of hormones, which is mm-hmm. in the same way, sort of the way of it's the other side of that question, and
right.
that is there when once we have reached menopause. And I just want to say one thing is that is younger women could start doing these things now, and mm-hmm. the sooner we start to do the things to protect our brains and our bodies that we need to do in postmenopause, the better our lives will be for the last third of our lives. So if this is, I just want to emphasize that it's not just for women over 55. Okay, let's start that now. Let's do it. It's women in their 20s and 30s. I tell women all the time that the sooner they start, the better off they will be as they age. So one of the things is that we lose progesterone, and progesterone protects our brains and is important for so many other functions, but we don't have it anymore after menopause. So then mm-hmm. we need to start doing some things to really rev up our brain function, to rev up our cognitive function, and keep our memory sharp. And there's a lot of things that we can do for that. And then taking supplements, I know that you have talked a lot about that, and you're an integral nutrition coach, and so you know a lot about how powerful supplements can be for shifting the body into health. And mm-hmm. I think that is something that we really have to look at after menopause and even before, just to get our organs and our bodies into the best shape they can be. And I think that taking supplements after menopause becomes absolutely critical to replace, again, the things that estrogen and progesterone did for us in our earlier years.
Well, I'd like to address, first of all, before, you know, what you can do as for my listeners who are not in menopause or who may have daughters. I think I agree with you. What you do earlier in life is create. And I'm going to give an example here. My mother is 87. She is riddled with rheumatoid arthritis. She has no muscular body left. She has no muscles. She's weak. And I believe, we'll take aside the fact that rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune. I do believe that had she exercised, which she never did, and had a better diet in her youth, and on an ongoing basis, she wouldn't be in the weakened state that she is in now, which is, you know, she's got a great mind and literally she's got a crippled body. And I truly believe that there were things she could have done to be more proactive, to keep her body and muscle and her skeletal, you know, system and her, and every part of her tissues, everything strong. And she never did it. And so I'm giving that as an example. But let's talk about very concrete things you can do when you're younger. Obviously, exercise and diet, but what else?
Exercise and diet, Melanie, you're 100% right, are so vital. And what we are beginning to see in all facets, in the media and in research, is that exercise might be our magic bullet against so many diseases and so many issues that plague older people. It's amazing the science that's coming out. It is emerging every single day. And what they're saying is that 50 minutes of exercise 5 days a week at 70 to 80% of your maximum heart rate, which you can find at heart.org, it will give you it will give you your maximum rate at your age, is critical. And then, even further, my favorite girl gang, as I call them, Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn and Dr. Elisa Eppel, who won the Nobel Prize, discovered something called telomeres and the effect of telomeres. And what that is, basically, is that those are what keeps your brain healthy and what keeps your neurons and the nerve fibers in your brain from getting tangled. We've all heard these terms, tows and tangles, as part of something that is very much in the brain of Alzheimer's patients. And they find these when they do the autopsies. And so telomeres are part of that process. And the longer and stronger our telomeres are, the healthier our brain will be and the less tangle we will have. Now, how does that relate to exercise? Because Dr. Blackburn and Dr. Eppel found that HIIT exercise, high intensity interval training exercise, is a fabulous way to strengthen our telomeres and to lay down, as I say, lay down new track in our brain, lay down new neurons in our brain and fire up quadrants of our brain to develop more neurons and to develop stronger connections with those neurons. And so exercise. Another piece that they also found was non-repetitive exercise. So things like Zumba. And 4 years ago, I took up tap dancing, badminton, tennis, basketball. Those kinds of things that are non-repetitive seem to be a fabulous way to keep our brain really healthy. So exercise is a key piece. Another piece is our diet. And I know we've heard all about this till we're blue in the face, but one of the biggest culprits is sugar and getting rid of sugar, because inflammation drives disease. They now know that. That is an absolute A to B. So now if we can lower our inflammation level, and there's several things that we can do to do that effectively, then we can stave off many diseases and the counter effects of losing our hormones.
Well, I agree with you on all points. I want to bring up, I love high intensity exercise. And for listeners, you don't have to go to a HIIT, a HITS class, as they call them. You can do it as simply as, you know, doing a jog, walk, a run, walk sequence when you're taking a walk and run for do a fast paced 60 second run and then slow it down and walk and kind of alternate. That's a way to get your heart rate going. Do jumping jacks for 60 seconds. I mean, if you do a stop start, even 60 seconds fast, 60 seconds slow, you'll get your heart rate going. That's the key, is to get your heart rate going. You mentioned dance, tap dancing, way to go. I think dance and taking a dance class is one of the greatest ways to not only get your heart rate going, but also to boost another hormone, serotonin, what they call the happy hormone, because your body is happy and flowing. I was in the ocean yesterday where I am, and I was like dancing in the ocean, literally, just doing movements with flotation, and it just felt so good. The one we didn't touch on, which I also think is important, And I agree that non-sequence is great because sports help you with your concentration, but also doing some light weightlifting to build your to build your muscle and bone is important, as well as kind of the full circle form of exercise. So it's not just one thing; it's like a full circle of cardio, weight, stretch, balance, flow, body flow, and a sport to get you concentrating and a little strategic. It's a kind of a great mix, and you won't get bored, right?
Absolutely. Melanie, you are right. And also, I'd like to add to that, you are correct about the weightlifting. And
yes.
one of the most effective ways to use HIIT is to do a set of weights and then mm-hmm. jump on a bike or on a treadmill or even a jump rope. And 1 minute, as fast as you can go, 1 minute mm-hmm. of recovery, then go back and do another set of weights. And that back and forth seems to be one of the key things for not only building muscle, but building cardio strength and heart health. And that's another thing that we can talk about as far as women and heart health, which is a critical thing. And so many women die every year in the United States from heart attacks that could be prevented. But dance, I want to go back and speak a little bit about dance. And to tie mm-hmm. into that is music, which mm-hmm. is something that is really not getting a lot of press, but should be. And that is the power of music. And dance is a wonderful way to combine the two of music and physical non-repetitive movement, like ballroom dancing or tap mm-hmm. dancing or jazz. And that is the brain gets different signals from both the auditory and then the physical. So you are getting what is really a full brain workout when you listen to the music, and then you have to think about what you're going to do, and then you physically have to do it. So it's a tremendously effective thing, and great science is coming out on it all the time about the positive effects of dance.
I agree. And you know, if you live in a community, like I live in a rural community. I used to live in Manhattan where there was a class every 2 seconds down the road. Now I live in a rural community where it's a little harder to find classes. And I literally went into a ballet class and I asked if I could, you know, join. Of course, everybody was like under the age of 10. And they're like, no, it's for little girls. I'm like, but I'm a little girl at heart. You know, forget it. I want to be in the class. But, you know, go to your, here's some ways to find out about these kinds of classes, whether you're living in a rural area or maybe you're on a budget or whatever. YMCAs. They're a great resource for activities. Sometimes churches, libraries. My local library does a Zumba class for they call seniors. You can also, if you live in a town with a university, you can apply to what's the term? It's not, I forgot the term, but you can actually participate in a class for non-credit. I forgot the
like
name of the term.
Continuing education.
You continue education, but you can also you can actually attend a class just to say you want to be in the class. You won't get credits for it, but you can. There's a term for it. I can't remember. But ask about that. How can I participate? Do you have any programs for seniors? You know, ask, and it's actually more than you would ever realize is out there. If you really want to, you know, University of Google, you'll find things. So it is possible. And of course, if not, there are some wonderful free classes on YouTube and channels on television on your, if you have a Fire Stick, there's 9,000 channels out there now that stream classes that you can do at home. I know I do that when it gets really cold and snowing. I don't want to go out where I live. I want to address, we're at 12:29, so we're going to take a short break. I want to come back and address, I have addressed heart health quite a bit on this show, but what I do want to address is some of the emotional effects that can impact how you age and how to address that as well, because a lot of my friends and a lot of my followers, and I don't know about you, reach out and say that there's a lot of issues that nobody is talking about that affects how they feel about themselves and how they're being treated, and just fatigue, mental fatigue, things that you really want to combat so you can stay vibrant. And I'd like to address that when we come back. I also want to remind listeners that we are taking questions at W4WN.com. That's the Women for Women Network. And again, you're listening to Fearless Fabulous You. And my guest is Lisa Rohan, who is a certified gerontologist. We'll be back in a few seconds. So just hold tight. Hi, this is Melanie Young, host of Fearless Fabulous You. If you or a loved one has been diagnosed with breast cancer, I urge you to read my book, Getting Things Off My Chest, A Survivor's Guide to Staying Fearless and Fabulous in the Face of Breast Cancer. This is a book I wish I'd had when I was diagnosed with breast cancer in August 2009. In it, I interview survivors who provide valuable insights on what they learn from going through breast cancer so they can help you make informed decisions and confident choices. I also talk to medical experts to learn the latest advancements on breast cancer treatment. And I provide important health tips on what to eat and how to care for yourself so you can stay as healthy and strong as you can every day you're through treatment. Getting Things Off My Chest, A Survivor's Guide to Staying Fearless and Fabulous in the Face of Breast Cancer is available on Amazon, and you can buy it through my website, melanieyoung.com, and I'll send you an autographed copy. I want you to stay healthy in every aspect of your life, and especially if you're facing a breast cancer diagnosis. So my message to you is stay fearless and fabulous always and in good health. And we're back. You're listening to Fearless Fabulous You. I'm Melanie Young, your host. That was my shameless plug, but you got to do it. But we're back with certified gerontologist LJ, that's Lisa Rohan. And we've been talking about how you can boost your body and your hormones naturally through exercise. And we covered array. I want to talk about this mental. You alluded to it in the first part of our show. And I remind the listeners, W4WN.com, send us your questions and I'll answer them online. We will together. Fatigue, mental fatigue, anxiety, depression, isolation. These are just some of the words that I've been reading from a World Health Organization study on women and aging that I was reading before we went on the air. Lisa. And these are real. A lot of women are outliving their spouses. They are, in the words of my own mother, living beyond what they thought their sell-by date. My mother actually told me she never thought she'd be living as long as 85 and 10 years after my father died. I'd like to address that aspect of aging, how to stay mentally vibrant and positive and address some of the potential emotional aspects of aging so that they don't get to you, because it all goes back to how, you know, obviously stress affects your body as well.
It does. Absolutely. You're right, Melanie. And that's a lot of things to cover. So let me try to pinpoint right. a few things that I think are really key. And I think there's two discussions here I'd like to make points about. And the first one is about depression and anxiety as we get older. And I want to say a couple of things about that and circle back to our earlier conversation about hormones. Mm-hmm. Again, when we lose our hormones, oftentimes we become more anxious and depressed because we don't have that protective armor anymore. And so it allows misfirings in the brain to happen and chemical production that causes anxiety and depression there's anxiety and depression. And I think that one of the ways that postmenopausal women and even younger women can fight that or augment that is to look at their diet. And there's mm-hmm. a fabulous new studies that are coming out about what you may have heard of called the gut-brain connection. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely going to take over, I think, a lot of our understanding of our brain, of the brain and how it works. In fact, Dave Perlmutter, Dr. Perlmutter said that we're just discovering that the gut is playing a crucial role in the health and functionality moment to moment of our brain. Mm-hmm. And they are now seeing that this thing called the vagus nerve, which is a major nerve highway that connects our intestines all the way up to our brain, seems to be a place where neurotransmitters and things like what you mentioned, serotonin and dopamine, go up and down. And when our gut is out of whack, our brain can become out of whack. And so taking care of our gut has now become a much more higher priority than we ever thought. And taking care of it and making it a healthy place seems to have the effect of changing our brain chemistry. And that's the new, that's the emerging research. There's more coming out, but at this point, mm-hmm. this is what we really understand. And so that is one thing I want to talk about as far as depression. And then I think, you know, there's so many things that we experience as we get older that do cause us to have emotional issues. And I feel like that one of the ways that we can combat all of the things that are going wrong in the world is to look at the things that are going right. And mm-hmm. to adopt an attitude of gratitude could not be more appropriate on the day before Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
And I think that looking at the glass as more than half full is a way that we can alleviate some of the mental stress of what is happening to us in the outside world and focusing on what's going right. I have a little practice that I have developed. In fact, I have a meditation that I offer people that is a gratitude meditation, and you focus on five things that are going right, five things that you can be grateful for in this moment right now. And it does a lot of things. Scientifically, there is a lot of evidence that shows that being grateful shifts everything into your body to a higher state of being. Because the truth is, Melanie, you can't be angry or sad or upset and in gratitude at the same time. It's not possible. So you put those aside when you step into a moment of gratitude. And it really can shift everything in your body. It's like doing an upshift of all your
hormones. Well, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you on that. And it's interesting because this morning as I was doing my own, I like to journal, or I live by the rule of five, and actually my second book addresses that. Everything's done in fives, Fearless, Fabulous You. I don't ever like to do anything more than five anymore. So it's five things on my to-do list, five things to be grateful for. And I think even when you're having the worst day, and I was having a worst day moment yesterday, I won't share, but it was like I was having a difficult phone conversation. And I had to do my own reset and think about those five things going well. And literally sat down and said, these are the five things. And for Thanksgiving, my husband and I will do the same thing. We will sit down and do that. What are the five things to be grateful for? You are so spot on with that. And this is something that anybody can do every single day to reset their mind, right?
Yes, and sometimes I have to do it several times a day.
Exactly.
When I'm having one of those kind of meltdown days. Absolutely, you're right, and it really does work. My husband and I have a practice that we've been doing for more than 20 years, which is before we go to bed at night, the last thing we say to each other is five things that we're grateful for that day. And he has told me, and he said, please mention this, so I'm going to mention it, that it has really changed his perspective as far as thinking about what's going right, and it's the best thing he said to bring on good sleep, and I agree. So I'm glad to hear it's working on my husband, at least. And that is that you go to sleep thinking about your blessings. And there's nothing that can take you to a more peaceful, restful, and restorative sleep than to be thinking about blessings versus the news.
Well, so, exactly. Exactly. And sleep is also critical to the whole overall well-being. If you're getting, if you have sleep disruption, you will not feel well. You will do something like overeat. You will get, you will feel anxious. So one of the problems that many women have is sleep apnea. I have it myself. And there are a couple, I've addressed it on the show quite a bit, but there are certain things that you can do naturally. I'm a big fan of I do take melatonin, which helps me. I also have learned to turn the television off and move the electronics out of the bedroom. What are some things that you would recommend to help with better improve sleep?
Melanie, I am so glad you brought up sleep, because this is mm-hmm. also so critical for women, even yes. more so after 55, but mm-hmm. because we are not as bulletproof as we were when we were younger, and could go on 2 or 3 hours of sleep night after night after night. We can't do that anymore because, again, we right. don't have that protective armor of hormones to help us.
Right.
And I think that focusing on getting 7 to 8 hours of good quality sleep needs to be our number two priority, right below 5 days of exercise. And this mm-hmm. is what I tell women all the time. And you're right, you are spot on about the electronics, and 45 minutes to an hour before, turn them off, put them in another room, and read a book. Look at a magazine. Do something else besides that. I don't have a television in my bedroom for that reason, and I think that's really important, too, is to turn off the TV. You are absolutely right. I also think that the gratitude practice also is very helpful. And in addition, I think you mentioned about journaling, and I think that's important, mm-hmm. too. At the end of the day, put down your frustrations, put down your stresses, put down your concerns, because once you put them down on paper, and not typed on a computer, but written with a pen on a piece
Precisely.
Of paper, is a really important and really powerful activity to get it out of your head. And then by finishing with your gratitude meditation, a gratitude list, then you're ready for a good night's sleep. And I think that way you're not going to be thinking about all those things all night long, because you've written them down. And when you write them down, they're done. They're like out there, and you don't have to think about them anymore. And I think that is really critical. The other thing I'd like to mention is, well, two things, actually. One is to find some quiet time during the day. In my grandmother always said, I'm going to go take a lie down. And, you know, we all would just roll our eyes, go, okay, whatever. But now I understand how important taking those lie downs are. 20 minutes during the day to close your eyes. Now, not you don't have to physically lie down, but if you can, that's even better. But to close your eyes and stop. Now, this is not meditation. This is just stopping your body. And being still. It's about being in stillness. And that seems to be a very powerful thing towards helping you to get restful sleep. And the last piece is meditation. And meditation means so many things to so many different people. But what it really is about is emptying your mind and not thinking, actively thinking. It's focusing on words, focusing on your breathing, focusing on listening to the air conditioning run, but just letting your brain rest. And they find at the brain health at UT Southwestern that this seems to be a very positive thing, especially for executives who are very busy during the day, but for anybody who's very active mentally during the day, is to stop and let your brain rest in a type of meditation, whatever that means for you and whatever feels comfortable for you. But that's really critical. And then you gain those benefits when you go to sleep every night.
Exactly. And meditation doesn't need to be sitting cross-legged and, you know, chanting. I mean, I do meditative walks. I go outside and take a walk, even if it's a short one, and just kind of, you know, if I'm in an area where there's a pool, just move my body and just don't think about anything. I mean, you can be moving and meditative, and you can be sitting or lying down and meditative. I think your point about, you know, I love Julia Cameron's book. She's been a guest on the show, The Artist's Way. She did a version for people who are in retirement, how to keep your mind vibrant in retirement. Mm-hmm. And she advocates morning pages, where every morning you write in a journal, longhand, which is key, 3 pages of whatever just flows out of your mind, not a to-do list, just 3 pages of stream of consciousness writing. I like the idea that you brought up of doing it in the evening pages, because often in the morning, you know, they say she'd be the kind of woman that when she gets out of bed and puts her feet on the ground, people go, crap, she's up. That's me. You know, I'm ready to go. But at the end of the day, I tend to be more reflective. And it is a wonderful way to conclude the day by writing in your evening pages. I mean, basically, you can journal whenever you feel like it, and you don't have to journal a lot. 3 pages is actually a lot to fill if you give it a try, but it's a very centering thing to do. And if your mind is, you know, two other things I'm going to add, don't eat too late. because that will affect your sleep. There is a benefit to those early bird specials, mm-hmm. besides the cheap price. Mm-hmm. They're better for you. We've been eating earlier out here quite a bit. I'm way out on the West Coast right now, and it's been better for the sleep. So think about don't eating late and don't eat too heavy at night, because that will affect your sleep. And instead of television, read a book, do a crossword puzzle, write in your journal, just anything that's not technological.
Absolutely, you're right. And I'd like to also go a little bit further into one of your points you made about journaling. Julie Cameron's one of my heroes. I love her, mm-hmm. and I love everything yeah. she says. And she's right about the 3 pages in the morning, I think. And I think Melanie, you've got the right answer, which is morning and evening. And the reason from a psychological standpoint is this: the morning time is where you're dreaming and hopeful. You have the day ahead of you. It's a time when you can write out your wishes and your dreams. And writing those down is the first step to manifesting them. And that's mm-hmm. that's critically important. Then at the end of the day, you have your emptying out of the stress and the frustrations of the day. So you empty out and you don't carry those with you when you go into sleep. And I think both of those can be incredibly effective. And, you know, I know what you're saying about the 3 pages, and people go, oh, 3 whole pages. Oh, my God, I can't do 3 pages. But, you know, just a little sidebar, they have those notebooks that are only like, you know, 4x6. And so mm-hmm. 3 pages of 4x6
get a smaller
doesn't
book.
Take that much space. And it allows you just a little chance to have that experience of pen to paper and putting some thoughts down. So I think you're right. I think both of them are really good for us to move towards restful sleep. And your eating right is absolutely on the money, too. And the new science, of course, that's coming out is about fasting, mini fasting. And that is eating, say, by 7 in the evening and then not eating again until, say, 9 or later. There's a lot of different schools of that, but basically 12 hours for sure. And that also gives your body a rest and helps you have restful sleep.
And for those of you who don't like the word fasting, because that can go into a whole nother tangent, which A, we don't have time for, and B, is somewhat controversial, just eat lighter later. I mean, eat lighter and eat earlier. I always say eat lighter later throughout the day and eat earlier. And then naturally you're going to wake up and you will have not eaten for 12 hours. So it's kind of a natural fasting, because if you eat dinner at 6 or 7, and you wake up at 7, you've not eaten
exactly.
for 10 hours.
Exactly.
So it's natural fasting.
Right. And that's kind of what I do. And so I didn't even know it was a term. And I've now learned about it, obviously, as it's coming into the news. But yes, you're exactly right. And it is. It's just a natural rhythm that you will feel better with. And it's not a big, scary term. It's just what you're doing, because it feels best.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. So we've got about a minute left. I want to talk about any takeaways that you'd like to share for anyone that is 50 and older that you've learned from your own experience in the age group or through your studies that can everyone that we've not covered already. 3 to 5.
I think that there's a couple of things. I think number one is exercise. Number two is cut out sugar. Number three is meditate and drink 8 glasses of water. We don't talk about that very much, and get those 8 hours right. of sleep. Those are the most prescribed things that I feel like will really make a difference for us as we get older. And the other thing is to let go of regrets. And I want to just talk 1 second about letting go of regrets and finding contentment. And that comes from finding things that are going right, from being grateful. The last piece we haven't touched on is social engagement. And this right. is something critically important. And that is, as we get older, finding new friends and staying engaged to keep our brain stimulated. Hang out with old friends, but find new friends and
exactly.
find things and hobbies that really stimulate you. Something like pottery making, jewelry making, something mm-hmm. where you have to use all of your brain and you're learning something brand new. Or the even best thing is to learn a musical instrument, because musicians have 35% the results of Alzheimer's, as do non-musicians. And I took up the piano when I was 51 years old, and I will tell you that playing the piano regularly, my brain works a whole lot better. and I feel a lot better. So there's all these things, social engagement, keeping your brain stimulated,
right.
Exercise, sleep, good diet of non-processed food, taking supplements, and
right.
And really drinking your water. I can't emphasize water enough.
So basically, you have all the ability to age with vibrance at the palm of your hand and around you. You don't have to spend a lot of money. These are things you can do and seek and find yourself. And I think we've covered a lot. We've come to the end of the show. So I want to just make sure that the website for more information on Lisa is www.ljrohan.com. Want to be vibrant? Check out her website. And again, count your blessings. Don't count your calories this Thanksgiving. And remember, never reflect on the best days are behind you. Always think about the best is still yet to come. And the best is the
Absolutely.
Time that you're in, and make the best of the time you have. And with that, I want to say thank you for joining me today. Thank you joining me today, my listeners. Thank you, Lisa. And as always, stay fearless and fabulous.